PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is a collection of great minds over at Wilson Golf. We have Mr. Bob Thurman, who is the current golf GM over there. Sounds like he's had quite a tenure at Wilson, as well as Marcus McCain, who's, I believe, fairly new to the Wilson story, but's been in golf for a little bit. So, gentlemen, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Yeah, I want to start with Marcus because I think your story is a little bit fresh compared to Bob. Mm. You've seen some different companies in the industry, and you're now at Wilson. How did you get there, and what have you seen previous to that?
Yeah. Bob called me and sold me on the dream a little bit, convinced me to move from Carlsbad to Chicago, which has been an adventure.
Dream of Chicago, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm an East Coast, Northeast guy from New York. So this is just a gentle reminder of winter for me. But I've been with the Wilson team for about 8 months now. It's been fantastic to kind of see the evolution of the brand, see the evolution of the products. I was actually with Cobra Golf in Carlsbad for about 3 years with the team there, working with Jose Miraflor, who you guys know quite well, and Mike Gagley and the whole crew, kind of leading all the product launches and go-to-market and brand campaigns over there. It was a really fun time to be with that brand and experience the growth and all the things they were doing on tour. Bob called me up and kind of said he had a great opportunity, and he was looking for somebody with a little bit of industry experience who maybe thought a little differently about golf and marketing and what it could be. It's been for me as a brand marketer, it was, and a sports guy and an athlete growing up playing a bunch of Wilson products, it was kind of like a bit of a homecoming for me, you know, Wilson baseball gloves, kind of had it all growing up. So it's been a really fun, interesting, challenging, exciting, almost going on a year now.
Now, I want to track that a little bit because there is a little bit of, I'm not going to use the word I want to use, but there's a lot of connections in golf that are made over time between, I want to say company hopping almost, company to company to company. Bob doesn't know anything about that based on what I read on his LinkedIn.
No, but the funny thing is I know Mike Yagley from 30 years ago at Maxfly. So
okay. Well, I saw aerospace engineering is what you studied at Mississippi State. Yeah. And I believe Yags is a bit of a playing guy as well. So the connections are pretty interesting, but my question was more on Marcus's side, because there's a jump between the different companies, you see the different approaches to the whole golf story. And I know that Wilson is currently discussing this brand revitalization, which we'll speak about. But was it surprising to see the difference going company to company, seeing how things are managed, seeing how things are communicated to consumers and marketed?
Hmm. That's a really good question. I would say things are more alike than they are different with the golf companies. Like you were saying, Dan, you know, you've got a lot of people who have been around a lot of brands, right? And all the brands kind of at the highest level are all great in their own way. I think there's, you know, some little differences. I would say the biggest difference for me is in the personality of the people. And I think you see that reflected in how the brand markets. When I think about, you know, Wilson, you know, you've got a lot of people who played sports at a very high level, whether that's golf or outside of golf. We work with, you know, we've got Bob played baseball growing up. I played lacrosse all the way through college and coached for a while. We've got everything from professional tennis players. So you kind of have these multi-sport athletes touching the golf brand in some capacity, which is really cool to see. And then, you know, if you backtrack it to a brand like Cobra, right? Like they like to have fun. They are very serious. They make great golf products, but you know, they're not going to tuck their shirts in all the time. They're going to wear some loud colors. You get some of that Ricky effect rub off. So it's interesting to see kind of the personality of the people become almost the personality of the brand to some capacity. I'd say that's the biggest difference. You know, making a golf club is making a golf club, and it's one thing in the way and the manner that you do it, but it's kind of the expression of the brand and the expression of the people sitting at the table, which makes each company really unique and kind of interesting and special in its own way to me.
I'm starting to see why you called him Bob. I'm convinced at this point. Well, let's go with you, Bob, since I think there's an opportunity to share your story a little bit more as well. And I apologize for doing this, but I'm at the age where I'm actually aging myself a little bit. So I'm going to do it to you as well. 30 years ago, a little bit over 30 years ago, you started with Wilson. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you've been with them the whole time, but you've been in a number of different roles. You're welcome to talk about those individual roles as you progress through, but I'm really interested in your perspective on how Wilson has changed over time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a really rich story. Everybody should sit back just a little bit. So, yeah, as Marcus mentioned, the whole company is just a lot of ex-athletes. And so you were around that every day. So when I was in high school, I played baseball, football, basketball, and my dad still plays every day. I just played with him on Monday. So golf was a part of kind of the fabric of what I did. I went off to school. I tried to walk on and play baseball at Mississippi State University. That did not work out so well. I did not have FCC caliber bat. So that I moved on and then started in aerospace engineering. And at the time, my professor was heavily involved in sports equipment. He was evaluating the drop three rule in baseball bats for college. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it's a minus three setting that they use for baseball bats, basically the length minus the weight can only be minus three. And I was like, wow, you can apply aerospace engineering sports. You know, we did a lot of wind tunnel testing. And my first job offer that I got was with Wilson designing dimples on a golf ball. And I was like, I can't believe I want to pay somebody to do this. And so I got, you know, heavily involved in that. But the funnest part of my career was actually managing all of the research and testing functionality that we did. So all of the golf lab robots and launch monitors I've developed before things like TrackMan, our own launch monitors and performance was, you know, kind of what I did. In 2006, I moved to Chicago. I was running the entire R&D team for golf and getting the Wilson staff brand going at that time with Tim Clark and Doug Thiel and Tom Gruder, people that you guys know. In 2011, I had the opportunity to move into the R&D role across the entire company. So managing all the R&D teams for Louisville Slugger and Evo Shield and Demarini and our racket sports group and our team sports group in football and basketball. And then at that time, we weren't number one in all those sports. And we really made a serious pivot around 2010 into innovation and R&D. A lot of that was driven from things that I'd learned from golf. The amount of R&D put into golf equipment is amazing. So we're able to kind of, you know, use a lot of the insights, you know, from golf into getting ourselves to number one in tennis, number one in baseball, number one in football, number one in basketball. And I worked on all those products. So when we come to kind of today and getting into what we're doing with golf now that I've been the general manager for almost about 8 months, unofficially for about a year, it's the same thing. It comes down to you have to make equipment that players love and it has to perform. Number one, that's what all your readers are talking about. And that's what they want to know, what the equipment does, how does it help them play better. And that's what the team that I do. We have a ton of very capable R&D engineers that have come from other companies as well, such as TaylorMade and Cobra and Callaway and whatnot, working on all the products that we have in the background. So our equipment is getting there to where we want it to be. I think it's some of the best stuff in the world. I think we make the best irons in the world. So then it comes down to, you know, our brand and how do we, you know, show people what we do every day, not only in golf, but as a company. And I think that's where, you know, perspective and that I had with Marcus and his background in lacrosse and things that he's done. And his just, he is an equipment geek himself and he is a golf nut himself. And everything he says, it can't be stocked. So everything's highly specialized in his bag and bring this perspective and this younger viewpoint into kind of what we're doing as a brand to really amplify that. So a lot of the things that he's doing now, I'm super excited about. So, you know, we're going to make great equipment. We're going to change the way we market the brand. And I think that's super exciting for me. So that's, you know, that's my big long narrative for that. I covered a lot of ground there.
Yeah, well, it's great. I mean, I think back to, you know, 10 years ago, whatever it was, staff products were very impressive then, and the evolution is an interesting thing. But one thing I think is curious about Wilson Golf is it actually has an incredibly rich history in the game. Yeah. I mean, I just, while you were sharing your story a bit, I typed into the Google images Arnold Palmer Wilson irons, and there's just a myriad of putters and irons that come up. And I mean, we're talking about some of the greatest players to ever play the game using your product in the history of your company. So my tail off on that is, when it comes to something like that, when you have such a rich history, how do you look forward but also celebrate your story as it was?
It's a very delicate balance, and I'll let Marcus elaborate on some of that. Obviously, we're a brand built on people that have won major championships. We've won more major championships with our irons than any other brand, and that's true in every decade going back to 1914. And that's a very important, you know, part of the Wilson story. You know, with Woodland winning in 2019, we've had one in every decade, and it's on us to put number 63 on the board, and that's where we're going, right? So, but I want to, I think people can understand the Wilson brand from kind of where we've been. We don't want to lean back too much on that. You know, we don't want to lean back on our, on our past. We really want to look into the future. And I think that's what we're building here is, where are we going? And that's what Marcus is excited about as well. What can we do with all the power of the brand and all the great things going on around it? And where is Wilson Golf headed in the future? And that's what we want people to be excited to be a part of, where we're going.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like Bob said, it's kind of the delicate balance, right? You don't want to live in the past and harp on, hey, we've won 62 major championships, but everything we're doing today is relevant, right? So how do we do that without eulogizing the brand? How do we carry that ethos forward into 2024 and whatever year we're in these days, 2024 and beyond? So it's we're thinking about that, you know. And when I think about the wider Wilson portfolio and kind of what this company does at its best, when it's at its best, it's about the best products in the hands of the best athletes on the biggest stage in the world, right? It's the basketball, it's the football at the Super Bowl. And then how do we bring that mentality kind of back to golf, if you will, in a way?
I want to ask two really challenging questions. And you can either tell me I'm insane, or you can go into whatever depth you feel like with it. The first one is, because you're such a multi-sport company, because your product is so recognizable in so many different sports, does that enhance or challenge the recognition that golfers would have when they see a Wilson product as it relates to golf?
Want me to take that one, Bob?
Either way, I can start and you can finish, or, you know, honestly, I think people would be interested in hearing what you have to say about
that. Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think it's a knife's edge. It's a bit of a dual-edged sword, right? And this is just speaking candidly about it. You know, I think that it can be a negative thing sometimes in the eyes of golfers of, hey, you know, you guys may not make great golf product. You can't possibly make great golf product because all these other companies are just golf companies first and foremost, right? You guys are doing a whole bunch of other stuff, and you can't possibly make something as good as a different brand. But it can also be an opportunity. And I think it is a unique thing for us, and it is our kind of secret sauce and something we've got to figure out how to leverage and talk about and lean into is, you know, we make great golf equipment because we do all of this other stuff, because we have such a robust R&D process, because we have such a really in-depth understanding of ball dynamics and all the things that Bob's team is working on. You know, we're not just focused on forged carbon steel. We're looking at all sorts of other wild materials and tennis rackets and across the board baseball bats. So we've got this extraordinary breadth of knowledge, extraordinarily deep kind of understanding of sport and equipment in sport. And I think, you know, that's kind of a strong suit on the strong side for us. And that's kind of something, you know, I think with having Bob come in, that excites me most about the brand is the things and the angle that he brings. Like when he says, you know, we've got to make great golf product first, foremost, it kind of starts and ends right there. And that's what we do in the other sports, right? You don't find somebody that makes a better basketball or a better baseball mitt and how we kind of bring that into golf is what's exciting looking kind of on the horizon.
Yeah, what I wanted to interject in case, Bob, you wanted to add something as well, but it, what I find interesting about that sort of situation you deal with is you have companies that, you know, maybe their biggest seller that their company is tires, or maybe their biggest seller is steak seasoning, but yet somehow they get away with also making golf products and those are featured. Whereas when you're in the sports space, the way that Wilson is, it's suddenly this overlap, like, oh, well, they're busy producing an airless basketball. How do they have time to make a golf club? You know, that I think has always been the really fascinating component to that.
Yeah. I worked on the airless basketball, so I do know that. I do know that story very well. I have no idea what's going on in my voice. Like, you know, there's something that always happens when we get a chance for people to come to our innovation center, and what they see is our racket sports R&D people, our baseball R&D people. They see our golf R&D people. They see what we're doing in each, and we usually, the comment is, you're like, wow, you're not who I thought you were. And so what you see in each business unit is that they are athletes that are dedicated to those sports. And it's very important that we, like, especially in when I talk about R&D, those people that work on those products played at, you know, all their life or at the highest levels. We have, you know, a couple individuals. In fact, we have a world champion in pickleball, for believe it or not, that's working on pickleball paddles, right? So that's how each sport is. And so Wilson has never really marketed itself, you know, across, you know, a wide platform. It's been very specific. Baseball is kind of its own kind of business unit. They market to baseball players. Golf markets to, you know, to golfers. Tennis markets to tennis players. And they're built of people that play the sport. And so I'm a single-digit handicap. Market's a single-digit handicap, much better than I am. Hits the ball a little further. But we're built with golfers that are inside the unit. Everybody plays at a high level, you know, at Wilson. And so what I want to say is we are very specialist within, even though Wilson covers a lot of territory in world sports. And I think what it is, and we have to be careful of it, because I think the awareness is very high on the brand of Wilson. And then as we get into consideration around the different sports, it changes a little bit. But, you know, that is just intrinsic, you know, to what we do. Each business unit is built specifically to be specialist. So our point of difference in other golf brands is, you know, obviously you can either embrace it or run from it. And to me, I think that we tell a compelling story about who we are to the world of sport. And golf is an important piece of that. Most of these other sports, basketball, football, baseball, you could even layer in tennis there. Most people, once they age out of those sports, except for tennis, they end up in one of two things, golf or tennis, right? And golf's a lifetime sport. So
or pickleball now, apparently.
Or pickleball, right? Exactly. So pickleball kind of peppers in there in a lot of different ways. And so I think, you know, we had tried to stay away from being seen as kind of a generalist, and we were missing the power of the entire brand, because the brand brings a lot of people to the sport of golf. And, you know, we think that's a very important part of our story.
Yeah. It's interesting because there is such a dynamic component there. And I believe THP has had folks come out to your company out there in Chicago and seen the way everything's set up. And they've been absolutely awestruck by some of the products or the rooms, you would say, that are without your complex. I'm curious, though, when it comes to golf, is there a way to create that same level of surprise or shock or whatever you want to call it when people come through and say, holy, this is the golf story. This is the history of that. This is the new product. I'm trying to word this correctly. There was a certain level of awe that came from, like, all this stuff going on, and I'm curious golf has that same level as some of the other brands or sub brands in the Wilson story.
Marcus, I didn't quite get all that.
Yeah, you cut out there a little, Dan.
Oh, you lost me a little bit? Okay.
Now you're perfect. Yeah, just a little bit.
All right. So when THPers came out to the headquarters, they saw all these different rooms with baseball and tennis, and they were just absolutely awestruck with that. I'm curious if, like, non-golfers go into your conversation about Wilson, or they look at your complex out there, do they have that same level of awestruck, or are they in the same level of awe when they look at golf, or is that something that you're still working to build up to?
No, they definitely are. So you're basically saying, let's say somebody that doesn't play golf, like somebody maybe in, you know, into tennis or something like that,
yeah,
comes into it.
Yes.
Yeah. No, no, they absolutely are. And it's, you know, when you walk around the facility, and we have satellite facilities too, that's not just there, you know, our outdoor testing facility for golf is not in Chicago. It's actually somewhere where you actually hit golf balls year round. But when you come in, and our innovation center is very specific, it's designed to do one thing, create intellectual property for our company. And basically we have designers working alongside mechanical engineers, working along CAD designers, material scientists. And so we're designing up front all of this different equipment. And it's fascinating for them to walk from what we're doing in racket sports across to what we're doing in golf, and seeing somebody working on a CAD file for a new wedge. And they're really interested in kind of in that. And then they move to the back of the building where we're doing all the prototyping, you know, making rackets in the back, machining putters, you know, whatever it is that we're doing in the back that day. And then, but the middle of the building is kind of a testing environment. And we have our own tennis court in the middle of our innovation center. We have simulators, we have our own half basketball court. So there's things that are done every day. And it's just people just don't realize that, you know, when they come in, that you do all these things for this sports equipment. And they're fascinated by the amount of details that goes into it, how we measure things, how we make things. So they are all struck, and it changes their perception of what Wilson is, you know, from the very beginning.
Yeah, and I'll say, Dan, too, to build on that, like when I started and kind of, you know, my first innovation center tour is kind of fresh in my mind. One thing that struck me for golf is how deep the history is, Bob. I think of right where we kind of test in the sim there for golf, there's about four or five file cabinets that are all about 6 feet tall. And it is handwritten build specs from, I mean, the who's, not even the who's who in golf, the who's who in world leaders and shakers. There is probably thousands of, you know, looks like handwritten notes off the back of a tour bus, everything from, I mean, like Dwight D. Eisenhower to Michael Jordan to Ben Crenshaw to you name it, you know, all these people who played golf and got serious about golf, presidents, senators, world leaders, Muhammad Ali. I think the most impressive library of specs from the beginning of time. You know, we could jump in there and pull Betsy Rawls specs and go jump out and build them tomorrow if we wanted to. It's a really neat archive of history that, you know, it's like we were saying before, is unique, you know, having that many major champions and 110 years of history in golf, you know, that we've hung on to a lot of that stuff.
So the second question that I want to challenge you with, and again, you can tell me I'm out of my mind, feel free to. I think there's always been a challenge when you have a wide variety in your lineup between like the starter sets and the absolute high-end premium product. And in some cases, I look at growing up playing hockey, there were certain brands I stayed away from because there was an understanding that, oh, that's the cheap stuff. You don't want that. But then when you get into the premium stuff, they also have the cheap stuff. You just don't see it because, well, that's the other company gets the feature on the cheap stuff, if you know what I mean. So, and by cheap, I mean entry-level product. Now,
yep.
Box sets in golf are such an interesting thing because they exist for a good reason. There are lots of people who need them. There are lots of people who benefit from them. And it makes the entry into golf a lot easier. So I can understand the desire and the interest in selling it. I feel like Wilson's done very well on that side. But then how do you start to differentiate that between that line and expanding into your premium product that competes with the best of the best?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm sure, you know, your community wonders that all the time. And, you know, there is, you know, as we've evolved over the last 20 years, there was a heavy reliance on us on that side of the equation on, you know, serving this beginning golfer with package sets at price points that are affordable. And we know that, you know, they are a necessary part of the game. We want to grow the game. We want people to afford it. We want them to get into it. The difference that you'll see us do as we move forward is that we're going to make premium products at every price point. And so what we want to do, if we're going to have a business like package sets or complete sets, they're going to be made from quality components that helps them play the game better, that transitions them from the Wilson brand and keeps them, when they transition to playing more prolifically, they transition into Wilson premium golf equipment. And I think that's something that we talk about quite a bit inside, that the distribution of those products are quite wide. And we probably lose a lot of people that start with the Wilson brand and then maybe migrate to something, you know, to another brand that has, you know, a higher, you know, a perception in the marketplace. I'll give you, there are some examples where it works. Marcus is actually one of those. As he started playing the game, he started with a Wilson package set, a profile package set. Next set of irons were Wilson C300 forged. And then somehow he got amazingly good enough to go straight into Wilson staff blades. And that was his story he told me. And then we lost him to this West Coast company called Cobra. But at that, you know, that was his trajectory. So that's an example of where it worked. I'm very cognizant that when we sell that equipment, that it gets out on the course, you do have other players that are with them that are playing. It's like, okay, that's nice. It was a great starter set. And when you get serious, we'll get you into another brand like a TaylorMade or a Callaway or something like that. And so I think that's something that's a disconnect that we had to fix. And the way to fix it is to make sure that the starter equipment that we put out in the marketplace at whatever price point we choose to is made of all the premium components. It is very well designed, and it's designed to keep them in our brand and get them to learn the game of golf and love what we do and be a part of our Wilson story for a long time to come. So it is something we're working on. We do recognize that.
Was there a time when it was Wilson versus Wilson staff, or was there still higher end? Like that was one of the more confusing components of it, right? Like I thought it was a good thing because, you know, when I looked at a Wilson staff iron, I was like, man, these are great irons. I used to love playing them. And then you see a Wilson product, you're just like, it's probably like more for tennis, you know. Just the differentiator in golf between Wilson and Wilson staff at one point when I started growing or grew up, it was definitely one bucket here and one bucket here.
Yeah, for sure. And let's just address it, right? This is you know, without going into our history of things, if you look at, you know, when I started with the company and our market shares and premium equipment, you know, and irons and golf balls and all that stuff were extremely high. Then all of these nice little startups like TaylorMade and Ping and Callaway and Nike and, you know, all of them came into the space and it became very competitive. I don't think our company reacted well to the pressures of the marketplace around, let's say, around 2000 to 2003. We made some choices at that point where we were treated on tour. We took some of our sales reps out of play. About 2 years later, we're like, you know what? That was golf is a part of the Wilson story. There was new ownership. We had different things going on. And so it has to be a piece of the puzzle. It has been for, at that point, 80 years. And so we had done a little bit of damage to ourselves with just what we called the Wilson brand at that time. And so we repositioned everything as Wilson staff under the shield. And that's what we've been operating under for the last 20 years. That's why we confuse people in a lot of ways. So we've been steadily building that business and rapport back, shifting everything back to the premium mix of our business. And that's where all the healthy things that we're doing now, you know, will come to fruition. So here we are 20 years past that point of Wilson staff, and we're actually migrating ourselves back to the Wilson brand, right? So the Wilson brand in 2024 is much different than the overall Wilson brand in 2004. The overall Wilson brand in 2004, we weren't number one in baseball. We weren't opening retail stores, you know, selling high-end sportswear. We weren't number one in basketball. We weren't number one in football. We weren't number one in tennis. And so all this brand work that we've done and making great equipment and the successes we've been having as a company, we feel like we need to make sure that we take advantage of the equity that's created by all of these other sports and equipment that we put out there, that, you know, golf is a big piece of the Wilson story. You know, like I said, people start in different sports, but ultimately they end up playing golf. And there's a hell of a lot of baseball players that end up playing golf, as you probably know.
Marcus, I want to ask you the same question, but in a different direction. Mm-hmm. Because Bob had a chance to go through it during his career with Wilson, you're looking on the outside just the way I would be as a consumer, especially prior to 8 months ago. Did you have that sort of same perspective, and has it changed dramatically since joining?
Yeah, I would say it hasn't changed dramatically since joining. I remember growing up playing baseball and having an A2000. My dad played a little minor league baseball for a little bit, and he had an A2000. So I kind of grew up with the brand a little bit. And I wasn't a golfer growing up as a kid. I actually didn't start playing golf until my late 20s. So I don't know if I was so aware of Wilson staff in 2004. I think I was a bit more, you know, ready for high school football at that point. It's been interesting to kind of see it since joining and kind of understand how the sausage has been made over the years. You know, like Bob said, Wilson was my first package set. I was in grad school and I had just finished up grad school. I was there for a summer without a job, and I had a buddy who played a bunch of golf, and he was like, you got to play golf. And I was like, no way, I'm not playing golf. And then he finally convinced me one day. I was hooked immediately as soon as we went out with that rental set, and I went right down to Fiddler's Green in Eugene and bought a Wilson profile package set. I was left-handed, so it was actually, Bob, funny story, the only package set offered in lefty that they had. So that's kind of what it was. But I knew the Wilson brand from other sports, and it made a lot of sense. It made it easy. So for me, you know, I think there's such a rich equity in that script and in that W, and it's so strong in other sports. You know, I think we've done, at the time in 2004, I think it was probably the right strategic decision to, well, you know, put it under Wilson staff, separate recreational from premium, make sure we don't dilute that premium brand. But now, you know, the brand's in a much different, much healthier position for Wilson across the board. And, you know, we kind of feel it's time to kind of start bringing it back and latch on to the mothership a little bit more. And, you know, not hide behind it, not be afraid of it. We are who we are, and we have the history we have. We can't change the choices that were made, but, you know, we can only kind of write the story from here going forward.
Dan, honestly, I appreciate you asking these questions. I was actually hoping you would ask these questions because that's where I read on, you know, on the forums, and I'm like, these are the questions. And so let's open it up and talk about, yeah, this is where we were and this is where we're going. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. So that's the hard part, because you know, I've been on THP for, I think, over 15 years now, and the progression has been really fascinating. The discussions between the different companies, who rises, who falls, a lot of times it's self-doing. And in most cases, the companies certainly deserve what they deal with, as it relates to how they tell their story to us consumers. And what I thought would be great, because I think there's more to this story to tell when it comes to product, but I think that's for another show. It sounds like you guys have some cool stuff coming that is worth talking about. But I thought this particular show would be great to really get the connection to the conversations that we've been having for honestly many years on the forum. And the idea that there was beautiful product that we loved talking about. I remember, was it the V6 or V8 that came in raw, the staff irons, and everyone just lost their mind over it. They thought they were amazing. And then it was almost just like this subtle, slow departure in the conversation. And it's full credit to other companies that they're doing really interesting things in the space and finding ways to innovate. And it sounds like you've been doing the same thing. We just haven't quite had a connection to it the way that we maybe would prefer.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for here. It's like the connection between your community members and what we have to say, and it's a good platform for us to speak on all topics. And so I appreciate that.
Absolutely. What I thought was interesting, you mentioned that Marcus happened to be a little bit better than you and hit it a little bit further. You also mentioned earlier in the show that there was not a club in his bag untouched, and he was quite the tinkerer of sorts. Now, I'm wondering twofold on this. Is that a conversation where it's two different minds going into it? Are you also a tinkerer, or is that just a little subtle jab at a guy who takes your money a couple times a year?
Oh, you're talking to me? I thought you were asking Marcus.
I don't know. Whichever one wants to be honest.
No, he's a golf guy for sure. And you know, it, even last we had a offsite meeting a couple weeks ago. Marcus was actually on my team, and you know, it'd been a long couple days of strategy sessions and whatnot, and he's got his marketing team playing in the group in front of us, and we're talking shop and everything. And he's like made a stop, and he's like, "Hey, look, we're two down here." I was like, "Okay, all right, here we go." So I willed myself to try to play better the rest of the way around because of that. But he's a competitor, and that's what I like about him. And I think that's you know, with what he's doing from marketing perspective and his viewpoint on golf, and it's a very fresh take for us. And you know, so I think that, you know, with his equipment is the same way, right? He's not going to have a stock head cover. He's going to stamp everything, and he's very specific about his specs and whatnot. But
do you stamp your own stuff, Marcus? You have some.
I do not stamp my own stuff. I try not to build my own stuff. I would say I'm a low class builder. But no, I've always been a tinkerer. Doesn't matter the sport. Like when I played lacrosse, it was, I don't know, different sticks every 3 months, taping them differently, stringing them differently. I've just kind of always been like that. No matter the sport, I've always had an affinity for equipment. It's kind of why I went back to grad school at Oregon to kind of get a better understanding of sports product. It was just something I realized of just like, geez, doesn't matter what it is. I could get into figure skating and I'll have eight pairs of skates and I'll know all about blade profiling and all that by next Thursday. So I've just always been a tinkerer in all sports. I just love the idea of having great equipment. I'm also left-handed through and through. I do absolutely nothing with the right side of my body. I'm truly born with two left feet. And So no, it's fun. And now being in the industry as a lefty, so I feel the gripe of being a left-handed golfer and looking at, wow, that's really cool. Guess I only get one loft from a lot of OEMs or whatever. So no, I'm like a kid in a candy store being left-handed. I'm always in his ear. Hey, did you guys get any left-handed samples? Did you do anything interesting for the lefties? So no, it's been fun. I'm always kind of messing with the bag. I'm trying not to as I get better. I'm trying to be a bit more restrained and a bit more focused on, you know, the wizard, not the wand, but you know, sometimes I just can't help myself.
Yeah. I happened to read perfectly timed this morning, a quote about left-handed people. They're the only reason they're left-handed is because they're seeking attention. Any truth to that?
There might be some truth. I tell Bob all the time, I've never met a lefty with bad tempo in any sport. Left-handed people always have grace and form and elegance that the right-handed community is envious of.
Well, I asked the question about tinkering because you have a new concept coming out called Wilson Fit AI, and it seems to be a new principle in the story of Wilson Golf. So my question there is that a lot of Marcus's involvement, understanding that golf is becoming very digital?
No, it took me a little long to explain to him the concept as we were going through it. I told you about my past in running our test facility where we did a lot of different things. We had a sister company called Suunto, probably, you know, 20 years ago. They made a watch called G9. It actually had some GPS, but they were kind of golfers in a way. And they had a lot of electronics in it that had sensors like accelerometers and gyros. And they sent it to me and I first started working on it and I was looking at the golf swing from how somebody loads and the timing and, you know, what are the rotations and all the kinetic chain of the body and how we might actually use it for fitting. So the concept is actually, you know, goes back quite a ways. And then in the probably 2014, 2015, 2016, the world got, it really got connected product crazy. I helped develop a Wilson connected basketball. They had a make miss technology. We had a Wilson QBX football that measures, it's like a launch monitor for quarterbacks and measures RPMs and release time and, you know, how many miles per hour a quarterback can get on it. Those were all connected, you know, to mobile devices. And so I've had a lot of experience with that. And then we've got some new talent at Wilson in our simulation team. Where we're starting to write a lot of AI type applications, and we're fascinated with being able to go out and measure these golfers and then have them fit and build an AI engine that would be predictive of what a fitter would fit that person into. And so we started that process as Marcus was coming on board. And what's really cool about it is just picking up this AI and being able to pick up on the nuances of it. We're able to develop something that's much more friendly for a fitter, right? So there's no face tape involved, no lie tape involved. The consumer is able to, if you look at a Mizuno shaft optimizer, they're swinging a golf club with a tiny sensor on the end of it. So there's nothing hanging off of the shaft anywhere. So it's very powerful. It's a very powerful sensor. And once a fitter uses it, that swing of the individual and the fitter's recommendation is stored. And we're able to recalculate the algorithm over and over. So the more it's used, the finer it gets. We've all had experiences with, the world of fitting where you can get two different results from two different fitters, and their philosophy gets built into it. And so what we were trying to do is build everybody's fitting philosophy into this AI type system. So it's very, thorough, quick, iron fitting system that, and at Marcus, what he was really interested in, and I really love it too, is that a lot of people just don't know what their specs are. So in a very short matter of time, five or six initial swings, and you're recommending, what shaft, what lie angle, what length, what weight they need for it, as well as like grips and things like that. So it really helps assist fitters in making a better fitting thing. So he was kind of came along for the ride of that. And so we really think it's a fascinating new way and a new technology for the world of fitting that really hasn't evolved much over the last decade or so. And so those are the kind of things that you can expect from Wilson going forward.
Is there an understanding of the digital era from a fitting perspective as well? There was a time when plug and play was just a reality. You got a fairly stock set and that was what you used. And I feel like 2024 is that they're very discerning golfer who understands they need certain things and are looking to go through that process. Is Wilson along for the ride with that?
Yeah. So just, you're talking about, people want to know, they're very discerning. It's obviously, and it's, this one is made purely to complement the fitter. The fitter is the expert at the point of demo, for these irons and making sure that, the data that they're using from launch monitors is that doesn't compete with that. It's really helping them kind of get into the specifications of it. And we believe that, we believe the consumers that are going in are much more educated. They know they need to be fit. And we're helping design, a technology that helps, not only the consumer get the best thing and also understand the information that they're being presented, but help the fitter in a more efficient process.
Okay. I have one more question, and we'll call this episode hopefully one in the Wilson staff story on off course this year.
All over the place. Episode.
But I was going through the website and I saw that the tour page, you call them your advisory staff. And I think that's interesting. It's one thing that I ask every company who comes on who has any connection to the tour is, how much, and I'll make this a question for both sides of the story, how much involvement do they have in the production and refinement of product? And then on the other side of that, how do you draw their experiences and their connection to the product to consumers to generate interest?
Well, I can answer the first part and I'll let Marcus answer the second part, right? Obviously, believe it or not, and I'm telling you too many stories. Like we said, this is the all over the place episode of Wilson Golf.
It is called Off Course. We're good with that.
There you go. So everything. The first endorsed athlete in the world was a guy named Jock Hutchinson, and he was a professional in 1918. And we actually used him to design golf equipment around. He was a Scottish professional at the time. So the first advisory staff for any golf brand was this guy. This is the history that we have. And so we've always used them as part of our process. And it usually starts, for, let's say, 2025. That started as back – in September, October of 23, as we get them into the loop of all the prototypes that we're building, get their opinion on face angles, head shape, performance. It always comes down to performance, especially with metal woods. The irons, obviously they're very discerning of what they want. They want slightly different finishes, or they want different, the offset's not quite right. And so we build them into the development of the product from the very beginning. And then Marcus is always saying the same thing. Hey, can we get a camera out there? But that's what happens with every sport, whether it's, you know, it's in tennis or whether it's in baseball. They usually start in November in baseball, going out trying to get, you know, the teams into the new, you know, golf club, baseball gloves or bats and whatnot. So that's what Wilson does. And if you ever come to our innovation center, there's a pro room for rackets. And that is just what that room is about, is making sure that we get them into the new models and get their feedback and all of that. So from a activation standpoint, I would let Marcus maybe pick up on what he would like to do going forward.
Before he does, I just want to add to that from the THPer side, there's always a curiosity between how quickly and how willing the tour staff is, or anyone who's connected to a brand is, to putting the new product in play. There's nothing clearer than a guy trying to make money, not willing to put a product in play. So when you see it happen, not only is that a story we want to hear, we also want to hear when it doesn't happen, because we don't want to buy that product either. There's a huge component there.
Yeah, it is. And it's very predictable. No, yeah. It's not predictable at all. You know, you take something like V6, you know, V6 was very successful for us, straight in the bags, no problem whatsoever. And, you know, that one went, we didn't realize that would be as, you know, at that time we're building off of, you know, what we know. And you're making, you know, adjustments that you think you already think that it should be fine. And a lot of times things go extremely well and go really fast. And sometimes you're like, okay, I didn't realize that we were getting hung up on that. You know, something like a lie angle on a metal wood, you know, come back to bite you, because some of the things, the trends have changed a little bit, what they're trying to do with ball flight, flighting the ball and whatnot. Pretty much and wedges is one of those things too, very personal to how they use them, making sure all the sole grinds are exactly what they need on given course conditions and the way they set up and whatnot. So sometimes they're just straight in, and sometimes it takes a few turns with them. And so that's the fast part of having kind of a tour related R&D component of our R&D setup, is to make sure you can react to those kind of changes.
Okay. So Marcus, yeah, that's great. Marcus, on your side of things then, how do you connect that story to consumers? It sounds like you're very interested in doing that, but what's the challenge there?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge honestly for us is we don't have the biggest, most robust tour staff in its current state. You know, we've got some good players and some young up and comers. So, you know, one thing that we're always evaluating and kind of looking forward as we revitalize this brand is what does that look like going forward? What does that look like in 25, 2026, et cetera? So that's something we're kind of working on behind the scenes a little bit. But then I think about, you know, sports marketing, and, you know, it's about putting the poster on the wall of the athlete and that aspirational bit, right? We all wish we were tour players. We all wish we could carve 3 irons around Augusta. That would sure be fun. And so, you know, we want to tell a bit of that aspirational story. And then we also want to work with ad staff and athletes where, you know, it's not so much about, hey, go sell this product, go talk about features and benefits, but how do we amplify their platforms? This is like sports marketing 101, but we're going to see the most success. And we do see the most success when we don't coach them on, hey, Kevin Kisner, you need to go talk about lie angles and face types and et cetera, et cetera. We get the most out of Kevin Kisner when we let Kevin Kisner be Kevin Kisner and we help amplify his story, right? He's just a guy out there playing golf and it ain't no hobby. And, you know, when we bring that together and we take that lens on it, you know, that's when fans connect and we can kind of humanize him and help lift his platform as much as possible with the brand. So that's kind of what we're trying to do, what we're going to do more of going forward, is kind of how do we get consumers closer to these tour guys, and how do we get them to understand that they're just golfers and nuts and junkies just like us. They're no different. They just happen to be really, really good. So it's an exciting thing as we kind of look to bring some people into the brand and find people who kind of ladder up and help, you know, build and tell our brand story and what we want to be to consumers. I think it'll be kind of exciting.
Yeah, I noticed 3 irons around Augusta. Did you take offense to that, Bob, or are you a 3-iron guy as well?
I finally gave my 3-iron up.
Sorry.
I struggle a little bit. I struggle with fairway wood, so I do have several utilities.
I've had a 1 or 2 iron in the bag for the last couple of years because I'm terrified of fairway woods. So
I love it.
It's great. Is there just to have a little bit more fun before we wrap it up today? Is there a big rivalry in the office between anyone? I know Marcus, you're coming from out of town a bit. Bob, I didn't notice where you grew up, whether it was Chicago or not, but anything get you fired up out there?
Well, yeah, we talk about college. Well, you talk about golf.
Anything, any sport.
College football.
College football is going to be the big topic of conversation for sure because I'm an SEC guy. I went to Mississippi State University, which we've got our own challenges, but I have to listen to all the Oregon stuff from Marcus. And he's got a new conference too. So we've got a lot there. And Marcus joined us toward the fall of last year, so we've only gotten a few rounds in together. So after I saw the competitive, his competitive nature, you know, over the last couple months, I know that's going to be coming. So there's going to be some strokes given.
Yeah, a couple good rival, potential rivalries there. You got Fields versus Allen, maybe Fields. You've got Buffalo versus Bedard at this point. It's going to be an interesting couple of years. That's cool. Yeah, that's great. The college stuff, just not my thing, but I love that. That was the question I was gonna ask Marcus. How many Oregon football jerseys, different styles, do you have?
I actually own none.
Okay,
I own 0 Oregon football jerseys. So I actually was the head coach of their men's lacrosse team for about 3 years while I was in and around grad school. I just wore so much green and yellow and black for like 3 straight years that when I left grad school, I was like, I can't wear O's. I can't wear ducks for like, it was like I had to go to duck rehab for a little bit. So I've got a few sweatshirts. I've got a kind of few pieces from when I coached. I got a big dumb duck head cover on my driver, but no, I actually don't own any jerseys.
Okay.
He doesn't have a sweet Mississippi State A2000 either. Mississippi. Oh, I can't turn it right. There it is.
That's pretty fancy. Yeah, my kid is only 8 this year, so we don't have anything that fancy yet, but he's vying for it, so that's for sure. Maybe we'll have you guys on again if you don't mind, and I'd love to take our conversation to the forum a little bit, see if they have questions for you. And it sounds like some new products in the works. This will actually drop after the embargo that I'm aware of will be up, but let's save it. We'll chat about it another time. How's that sound, guys?
I think it sounds fantastic. I look forward to seeing all the great comments.
This has been a super interesting episode. I love the idea of a revitalization of Wilson. I'm incredibly excited for the brand. We've always had a fun connection on the THP forum to you guys. And welcome, Marcus, and look forward to seeing what's going to happen with you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having us. It was a blast. Sure.
Absolutely. Hey, if you are playing golf this weekend, everyone out there, have fun. Make a count. Check out Wilson Golf. They have some great looking products already in line and some new stuff potentially coming. So stay tuned for that. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.